Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast, episode 27. The purpose of the Black Real Estate Dialogue is to document the journey of an up-and-coming Black real estate investor and to share the stories of successful Black real estate investors. Shout out to our show sponsors, Mint Inc. Mint stands for the Minority Interdisciplinary Networking Team. Mint empowers young minority professionals with an interdisciplinary network for learning, collaboration, and the development of entrepreneurial ventures. They just released a new issue, so definitely check that out. You can also become a member of their network for free at mintinc-usa.com. You can also follow them on Instagram at mintinc_USA. A couple of announcements before we get into the episode. So just an update on my real estate journey. My tenants did pay rent for this past month. So definitely grateful for that. I'm glad they're still working. I know there's a lot of landlords experiencing challenges with rent during all the COVID-19, but thankfully, I haven't had any issues. Also, looking for another deal, looking for another opportunity. Right now, I'm working with my business partner to find lenders. We had one that backed out a couple weeks ago to do small business loans. They kind of shifted gears. And so we have an application we'll be submitting to a lender this week. So hopefully that all works out, but it's been tough because I've been on hold for like 30 minutes trying to talk to different banks and stuff. So it's been challenging to find a point of contact, but hopefully we'll get that underway. And, haven't seen too many deals, that I like in Dayton right now, Dayton, Ohio. But you know, there's no rush, keeping patient, and you know, we'll strike when we find something that's worthwhile and that meets our criteria. Don't forget to leave us a rating, a comment, review on whichever platform you're listening to this on. It'll definitely help us move up in the rankings and reach more people. We're also on Twitter. Follow at Bred Podcast, at VRED Podcast. We also have a lot of resources in our link tree and also in our show notes, different courses and things to help you with real estate, things to help you with side hustles and making money and so on. So definitely check that out. Definitely a good idea to invest in yourself and your knowledge, especially during this time. Also join our email list. By signing up for our list, you'll get discounts, additional content, resources, and our newsletter that goes out periodically. And also feel free to grab our merch. So without further ado, let's get into this episode. I know y'all will really gain a lot of value out of it. Talk to you soon. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Black Real Estate Dialogue Podcast. Very excited for this episode. Today, here with me, I have Eric Friday, also known on Instagram as Real Estate Friday. We actually met at a meetup about a month and a half ago before all this Corona stuff happened. So definitely glad to have him. Appreciate you coming on, man.
Yeah, no, like I say, I definitely appreciate the opportunity. I definitely love what you're doing. Your vibe, your energy is definitely aligned with what I'm doing. So I'm honored to be here.
For sure, for sure. So first, could you give us we'll get more into it later in the interview. Can you give us just a brief overview of what you do in the real estate game?
So currently I'm multifaceted. Majority of what I do is wholesale, but I buy and flip. And then I'm a landlord. I buy and hold as well. So currently those are the three facets that I'm currently involved in, looking to obviously expand, but right now those are the three that I'm focused on: wholesaling, buying and flipping, and then buying and hold.
For sure, for sure. So we'd like to start off asking guests about their background, so we'd just love to learn more from you, what your childhood was like, and also what you saw or maybe what you didn't see that shaped your view of building wealth.
Okay, so I mean, I honestly didn't. So I grew up in the city of Detroit, Plymouth and Evergreen area, grew up there, went to school, Henry Ford High School, which is a little bit north of where I grew up, but it's still in the city. So I had a pretty typical upbringing in the city of Detroit that most people would have. I mean, wasn't too crazy, you know, it's growing up in the hood, obviously. So you see certain things, you get exposed to certain things, you're involved in certain things just because of the circumstances within the city itself. So I grew up, you know, went to high school, was taught, you know, if you want to make, I've always, like I say, growing up in the city, especially in Detroit, it's a very flashy city. So you grow up, you want money, you want, you know, the things that your peers have, but the older generation has. So you want to find a way to get some money, and you do that through different avenues. For me, I was always like in school, they, you know, get a job, or once you get out of high school, go to college, get a good job, and then you can make some money. So that was always the route that I was looking to pursue, looking for jobs. And the minute I got a job, I was looking at ways to get more money in that job. So I started off, like I say, went to college. I lasted a year in college, got kicked out. Then I finally did get a job at Walgreens, started off at Walgreens service clerk, and then just progressed through the company. And then eventually became a manager in the company. Like I say, just in the pursuit of money. Within working in Walgreens, there was a position that offered more money, but it required a skill with that account that you needed a degree for. So with that, I went to ITT Tech to get this degree so that I could have this skill on my resume to get a better paying job. Did that, got a job. Wasn't the job that I initially was anticipating, but it was a good paying job. Out of fresh out of college, I was making like $25 an hour. At that time, I was like 21, making like $50,000 a year, which was, for me, you know, pretty good. You know, 21, making $50,000 a year. That job then took me to, it was an engineering job, and it took me from Michigan to Indiana. And I was basically traveling, I would leave on Monday morning, and I would be gone in Indiana all the way up until Friday, and then I would come back home. Excuse me. And then during that time, like my son was, he's about 5 years old at the time. I felt like in kindergarten, like he was, my absence was affecting him. So it wasn't until like a year into that job when I really had a mindset shift to say like, you know, I can't do this. I can't work 40, 50 hours a week, especially out of town to provide for my family. It's just not worth it. So that's when I just start really exploring different options to make money. And I just happened to come across an interview on The Breakfast Club with Jay Morrison. And he was talking about real estate investing. And at the time, I knew nothing about it. This was 2013, 2014. I knew nothing about it. To go back to like in our city, 2008, like houses were literally on the market for $500. During that time, like I said, that was around the time that I got that job. Making $50,000 a year, I could have purchased multiple properties at that price. During that time, though, I wasn't focused on anything but, all right, I can go to work, make some money, I can come back to the hood and enjoy the money with my people, like celebrate, drink, have fun, girls, all this nonsense that doesn't make sense at this point. So yeah, so that was in 2008 when I really could have gotten into real estate, but my mindset just wasn't on it. And I even had people at that time telling me about, you know, you should buy this house, but it just wasn't where my focus was. So 2013, like say 2014, I found that interview with Jay Morrison. He was just talking about, you know, real estate investing and how some of the wealthiest people in America, their vehicle to that is real estate. And the main thing that stuck out to me was the wholesaling aspect. He was just describing how you could make a certain amount of money without having much money to begin with. And that was very attractive to me. So I started learning and teaching myself. I joined his school. I also went on to join another company that I'm not going to stay because I really don't want people to go that avenue because I feel like it was one of those guru.
Gotcha.
Schools, yeah. Doing that huge amount of money, and really just immerse myself in real estate, and that's really was the click, and that you can make some money actively during wholesaling and buying and flipping, but more importantly, you could get some income like a check, but
right.
Without the exerting the amount of work needed, which was buying and holding. So that was really like the spark for me to really just get into real estate. Like I said, I wanted something different. I was seeing people working because I was an engineer working in a plant in Indiana. Mm-hmm. Seeing people, you know, work 30, 40 years to just retire and then still go back and find another job. And I just knew that was that wasn't what I wanted. So I started exploring real estate, and that was, like I said, in 2014.
For sure, for sure. So walk us through what your first real estate transaction was like. Was it a wholesale deal?
My very first real estate transaction was I bought a house from our Wayne County, or the county I grew up in, Wayne County in Michigan. I bought a property in 2015 from that tax auction. It was a tax auction. I bought that property for $1,000. It was it was two doors down from the house that I grew up in. And once my mindset shifted, once I had that mindset shift, like a year and a half before then, I used to tell people, like, I'm gonna buy that house. Like, no one's living there. I'm gonna buy that house. So 2 years later, I ended up buying it, like I say, $1,000. I had to pay the back taxes, which were about $1,200, and I was a homeowner. So that was my very first real estate transaction. I don't know if you want me to get a little bit more into what I did with it, but that was the very
first. Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I purchased it, like I said, $1,000. I've had to pay the taxes, which were about $1,200. And my plan was to actually move into the property at the time. So, this was a mistake on my behalf, that I tell people, definitely know what you're going to do with the property, or at least have multiple exit strategies before you even buy the property. Because I bought that property thinking that I was going to move into it, and I rehabbed it like I was going to move into it. So, you know, you got to think, the common person, if you're going to live in a house, you're going to make it to your standards. You might make it nicer than the property that you might just be renting out. So that's what I did. This is a C-class neighborhood. It's a nice block, but the rent's over there, $750 for a three-bedroom. I get $675, and it's a two-bedroom. But I made it really, really nice. Contrary to that same sentiment is that I did make it nice enough to attract a good enough tenant to where I still have that tenant, and he still pays me monthly. So I do look at things differently in that aspect, that anything that I rehab, or whether it's a flip or a rental, I do make it nice. I'm not a slumlord. I want to attract the best tenant. So that is one of the good aspects of that. But I ended up spending a little bit too much on that rehab because I thought I was going to move into it. But all in all, I bought it in 2015. It took me a year to rehab that property. This property is 700 square feet. It's not a big house, but because of where I was at, I was doing the rehab myself, basically. I did a majority of it. I didn't do all of it myself. I had a plumber come in. I had my uncle, actually, who's like, he can build a house from the ground up. He helped me with a lot of things. But finally, like I said, 2016 was when I finally got it done, and I rented it out October 2016. And it's still rented to this day.
For sure, for sure. So it seems like you learned, there were a lot of lessons to take from that first transaction, but at the same time, it must have felt great just to finally, you know, you were doing the research and studying, and it must have felt great to finally have purchased something, to finally see the rehab through and have someone in it when all was said and done.
Yeah, no, I mean, that honestly, that is probably one of the key factors in why I'm able to rehab like I do now, and how I'm able to handle properties, because I know firsthand what it takes to rehab a property. I know the costs associated. I know things that pop up that aren't foreseen. And it really just gives you that, what a lot of gurus preach, is that skin in the game aspect of things. It's like, I went through everything. Like, when I literally blood, sweat, and tears, I literally experienced that with that property. Like, it's really nothing that I haven't done now to this point. So it's definitely gratifying to, when I finally, especially it took a year. So to know that and to have it, and for it to still be generating income for me at this point, no, it's definitely, it's a ton of lessons learned. It's a lot, like, there's no losses, even though, you know, are technically losses, but it's all lessons. And I definitely appreciate it, for sure.
For sure. And what was it like just being a new investor and just taking the rehab into your own hands? What was that experience like, just figuring out, like, how much rehab did it need? And what was it like just figuring out how to get it done?
So it wasn't, the property itself wasn't too bad. Like, the owner had they had took a certain care for the property, but it had been vacant for like 4 years before I bought it. Luckily, like I say, it was two doors down from the house that I grew up in. So I knew the neighborhood. I had already seen the house prior to buying it. So I kind of knew what it needed. But I mean, I had to redo, basically I touched everything in the house, the kitchen, I demoed the bathroom. There was paneling all on the walls. I pulled all that off, which in turn caused me more rehab costs because the owner, he took so much care of it. I don't know what type of adhesive he used to put those paneling up, but when I pulled it off, the sheetrock came down. So that it was a ton of patchwork that was needed after I pulled that paneling down. So that caused me more money. I demoed the bathroom, the bedrooms, new paint. I had to sand all the floors. On the basement, I had to redo everything, had to redo the electrical, plumbing, had to paint the basement, new furnace, new hot water tank. The garage was, it needed a lot of maintenance from not being taken care of for that long of being vacant. There were, when I bought it, in the backyard, it was like a jungle, like literally. I had to get like two dumpsters to just for outside waste. So it was a nice size rehab. It could have, if I had a team, I would have been able to do it a lot sooner. Luckily, I did have, I was able to do some of it. I had friends that were helping me rehab, and then I had my uncle. So, but all in all, I mean, just doing a rehab, especially your first property, it was rough. Like I say, it was really blessed with tears. The benefit is that I paid $1,000 for the house. So it's almost like you can't lose at that point when you know you can rent the house for $650, $700.
Right. So, for sure. How much rehab do you think you put into the house?
It was about $15,000.
Okay.
And I use one of the things too, though, I use credit cards to do it, which I probably would not, if I could rewind time, I wouldn't do it that way. Just because I was, just learning. That was my first one. A lot of people were telling me, yeah, just use your credit cards. That's like free money. To a certain extent, yeah, but it's a rental. So it's not like I get all that money lump sum back. It's like I got this huge rehab that I spent all this money on, and I'm getting monthly payments. So it was definitely a learning curve. I would never buy a rental with credit cards again.
Definitely.
Or rehab a rental with credit cards.
Definitely.
And when you look at that, $1,000, $15,000 in rehab, and it's rented out for $675. It's been rented out since 2016. So, I've got my money back.
Oh, yeah. Sounds like a good deal to me.
Yeah, definitely.
So you got that first one under your belt, and I know you mentioned you're in three different aspects. So you're in wholesaling, you're in buy and hold, and also buying and flipping. So where did the journey go from there after acquiring that first property?
It went straight to mainly wholesaling. That I give that to Jay. Like I say, that's how he taught us, is you start off wholesaling because it's the lowest barrier of entry. You can get in, especially at that time, 2014, 2015. I mean, you could start a marketing campaign for $500, or you could do things for free, or you could put out some bandit signs for a couple $100. The only thing you're doing is, you're spending your time. And then from there you go to, you build up that bag of money to be able to either put a down payment down, or you have enough money to partner with someone else to go into rehab. And then from there, once you've flipped bigger bags, now you have enough money to buy a property outright, renovate, and then put a tenant in there and hold it. And then from there you go to commercial. So that was the way he taught. And honestly, that's literally the way I pursued things. So wholesaling was the next aspect for me.
For sure. And so for you starting off in wholesaling, what was it like just to, figure out how to do it in your market, figure out how to find buyers and everything. What was that experience like for you?
So it was rough initially, because like I say, I started off with Jay, and Jay at the time, he was a national brand like he is now. And then I joined another school or guru's systems, and they were national. And they were all basically preaching the same thing to the process of doing it, but none of it was specific to what I was experiencing in Detroit. So it was tough for me, because not only was it not specific to my market, I didn't have the mindset to understand that, all right, yeah, I got to put out bandit signs, but I got to do this literally every week.
Yeah.
I need to be sending mailers literally every month, or I need to be posting on Craigslist literally every day. Like, it was things that for me internally, I wasn't prepared for. I was asking for things that I wasn't ready for, honestly. So it was tough. Like I said, I started learning in 2014. It took me to 2016. I bought my house a year later. I didn't finish rehab until 2016. It wasn't until really 2017 when I really got intentional about the wholesaling process and what it would take to truly get a deal and really be consistent with my marketing. So it was tough those first few years. And then 2017 was when I really, like I say, got consistent. My mindset really, really changed. Or it graduated from the years prior to that. And I really got serious about it, really.
For sure, for sure. And what did that first wholesale deal look like?
So the very first wholesale deal I got or closed was in June of 2017. And like I say, so 2014, I started. 2015, I bought a house. 2016, I actually got it occupied. And at the end of 2016, after I got that house occupied, and I was, you know, like I said, I used credit cards. So, and not only that, prior to that, like I say, I joined another company, and I took out a loan to do that. So I had all this overhead. And like, after I rented the house, I was like, you know what? This is just, I've invested too much time and too much money into real estate. I gotta really take this serious. So I remember vividly, like December 2016, I just made it an intentional, I intentionally made myself like get out into the Detroit real estate world, like start going to meetups, start networking with people, really get serious about what you're trying to do. January 2017 was when I started marketing consistently. So I started sending mailers literally every week. January, the first week of January, I literally posted on Craigslist at the time. It was pretty viable. I don't know how viable it is now, but I was posting on Craigslist every day, six ads a day, telling people, hey, I'm buying houses. Also telling people I'm selling houses to build a reputation up. So I did that, like I say, January, first week of January. I got leads in between that time, in between the time that I closed my first deal. But there weren't really solid leads. Finally, in May of 2018, I've been doing this now for 5 months, literally posting on Craigslist every day, sending mailers every week, going to networking meetings every month, multiple times a week. Got a lead, going to other different things to immerse myself in the real estate world. So I got this lead in May from a Craigslist ad. Guy called me. One thing I will say, and this is still true today, is that, and the guy even mentioned it on the phone. He said, I've called 6-7 people. You're the first person to pick up the phone. That is one of the key things that, even to this day, like I say, is vital to someone's business, is that you answer, especially if you're wholesaling, you answer the phone when you're sending out marketing. You or someone is answering that phone to take that call. So he called me. He said he wanted to sell his property. We're talking. We're having a good conversation. You know, I'm pulling up different data while I'm talking to him. And I was like, man, this looks like a deal. What he was asking was very close to what I think I could offer. And basically what I did from that conversation is I reached out to a guy that I had met. I met him previously. I met him in 2014 when I first started. But I got intention about building a relationship with him in 2016. When I got fed up, I reached out to him. his name is Jeremy Burgess, to say, hey, will you help me with this lead? I just want you to really show me the process. I'll give you half of whatever I made. And basically, he was like, it was basically like, how can you say no to that? I had been working with him, you know, doing different things. And he looked it up. I told him I had an appointment set up. And he said, all right, I'll be there. He came out. Basically, he walked around, talked to the seller, and we ended up writing the guy an offer. The guy accepted it. And then he knew a buyer in that area. He reached out to the buyer. The buyer came out a few days later. We signed the assignment with him, and we closed like maybe 3 weeks later.
Wow. And how did that feel to get that first wholesale deal under your belt after hustling for like 5 months to get leads and build things up?
Man, that was like, I honestly don't even know how to describe that feeling. Like when you, like say, I had been doing it consistently for 5 months, but I had started 3 years earlier and just had been dipping and dabbling. You know, I sent a mailer, stop. I put a bandit sign out, stop. I post on Craigslist, stop. But like to get that, so, and just the full transparency, we got that under contract. I don't know the exact price, but I know what I made. I think it was 40,000. It was 40,000 actually. We got it for 40,000, signed with the seller 40,000, and we assigned it to the buyer for six grand. So we total was 46. So when we closed and I made 3 grand and I gave him his 3 grand, like I promised, I said I would give him half of whatever I made to get that $3,000. And because obviously, like I say, I had built up all that the 5 months, the years before that to do it. But literally from the time that we signed the contract to closing, it was like 23 days. So to make 3 grand in that amount of time, I was like, okay, no, this is real. Like, it's not just what people been telling me. You know, they've told me they made 20,000, 80,000, you know, on wholesale contracts, which is probably true. But now I know for sure this, you can literally do this. So that was just like eye opener for me. And like Jeremy told me, the first one is your hardest one. It's literally your hardest one. After the first one, you know what to do. You can repeat it. So that's what I did, honestly.
For sure. For sure. That's so cool, man. I think what I'm picking up here is you fell a lot of times during the beginning of each different venture. But what I'm picking up is that you just figure out a way to move on and to learn from it and just continue to get better. And so you mentioned you had all this overhead, you had all this debt, credit card debt and loans for the course you did. And it would have been very easy for you at that time to say, you know what? I don't think this real estate stuff is for me. I think I'm going to just go back to whatever I was doing. But, you know, you decided to keep going. And then on the other side of that, you know, a little while after that, you were able to close that first wholesale deal. So I think it's just a testament to you just sticking it through and just believing that it can be done.
Yeah, no, for sure. Honestly, and that's just with anything in life. Like, if you really want it, you got to stay consistent. You got to be persistent. You got to realize that it's not going to be all highs. You got to be able to deal with the highs just as well as you deal with the lows. And just realize that, like, people talk about your why or whatever the reason for you doing things is like, I'm going to stick this out and just see what happens. Like, the worst case scenario is that I don't get anything from it. And that's the same thing as me not doing anything. So it's really not a loss at that point. Like, if I don't get anything for doing all this work, the most you've expended is some time and money, but if you try, and that's just my mentality at this point. It's like, I'm perfectly fine with knowing that I don't have to regret not. Cause had I just sat there in 2015, 2016, and just not did anything, I'd be miserable right now. I'm perfectly fine with how the you know, how things have progressed and how I've, you know, made mistakes, and I'm fine with that, you know.
Definitely. So where did wholesaling go from there, and what's it been like for you as of late?
So it definitely progressed. So each year it has progressed for me. Like I say, he told me the first deal would be the hardest one. I literally got my next deal a few weeks after I closed that deal. Wow. And it wasn't like something I did. I didn't do anything different. It was literally the person that I was sending letters to that whole time, they responded to me finally. And then probably like within that same month, another person from a letter responded to me. So that set me up where I wasn't necessarily, I hadn't closed anything, but I had stuff in my pipeline, which is very important as a real estate investor to keep leads and contracts and offers in your pipeline. So you always have, because most of the stuff that we're doing is 30 days out. It could be 45, it could be 60, it could be 90, it could be a year from now. But the important thing is that you're putting in the necessary work to constantly keep your phone ringing so that you can constantly talk to people, so that you can constantly go on appointments, so that you can constantly make offers, so that you can constantly get contracts, so that you can constantly be closing. And that's the most important thing. You got to always be closing. So for me, it went from that deal, and then I got another one, then another one. I only closed, well, I'm not going to say only, I closed 6 deals that year. That was my first real successful year of doing business. I closed 6. And then from there, it went up. I closed 20 deals and then 40 deals. And now I'm on pace to close even more deals than that. And then in the midst of it, I got buying holds. I got buying properties that I flipped. So it was like people, as cliche, is like it was like a snowball. But it took that first week of January 2017 for me to really get intentional with my marketing and, you know, networking and all that to be able to start that snowball, really.
For sure. For sure. And when you get leads, are you evaluating whether you want to buy and hold, fix and flip, or wholesale? Is that kind of what your process is like?
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, and I know wholesalers get a bad rep. And a lot of times for a good reason, because it is such a low barrier of entry and everyone is preaching it now that you could do it. So wholesalers get a bad rep. But for me, I feel like it's the perfect position to be in because I know that I'm not just a wholesaler. Mm-hmm. I'm just the person that's taking that call. And if it's something that doesn't fit my criteria, then I'm a wholesaler.
Right.
I'm the first person through the door. So it gives me an opportunity to decide on what I want to do. So now I can, because a lot of buyers depend on someone else to bring them deals, whether it's another wholesaler or maybe it's someone on their team, maybe it's an agent. They depend on that person to bring them deals. And they usually have to pay a fee or pay some commission to purchase. For me, if I'm taking the lead, I'm first dibs. So I get it at the price that I initially agreed to with the seller, which is usually the best price. So then I can decide if I want to buy and flip, if I want to buy and hold. It's a no-brainer. Like, but I also have the time and the energy to be a wholesaler. Like it takes a lot of work, it takes a lot of time. It's not a get rich scheme. You really gotta be born or really have it set in your mind that this is gonna be a grind. And I'm all about that. I'm all about a grind. So for me, it's just the perfect position to be in. And I know, like, I don't necessarily care what they say about wholesalers. I know the benefit. And I know true buyers, that really appreciate valuable wholesalers. So it's just the perfect position to be in.
Honestly. For sure. For sure. And about how many wholesale deals do you think you've closed to date?
So right now, I did that 6 that first year. I did like 20. In 2018, I closed about 40 last year.
Wow.
So that's
67. Wow, that's incredible, man. That's incredible. And it's just so crazy because you could have, if you made a different decision at that time and just threw in the towel, you would have never known that all of this would be on the other side of it, you know?
Nope. And it's not even about the money aspect. Like, obviously, we need money to live. Mm-hmm. But the money can go as fast as you get it. So it's not even the money aspect, just all the relationships I've built, just the opportunities that I've been presented with, you know, being able, I wouldn't have met you at all. So real estate is, it's for me, it's a vehicle.
Yeah.
It's not the end all be all. It's just a vehicle to get me to a certain point. To expand on my business, you know, my family, my legacy. And, you know, had I just stopped in 2014 or 15 or 16 when I, you know, things weren't the best, I don't know how I would be able to, I would probably just still be at a job, which nothing is wrong with a job, but I knew it, for me, it wasn't where I wanted to be. So, right. I don't know. Yeah.
For sure. For sure. So fix and flips, a lot of people have interest in flipping homes and kind of knowing what that's about. So could you talk through your first fix and flip and what that whole process was like?
Yeah. So my first actual fix and flip, it came via a wholesale lead. And the crazy thing about it was the same day that I got this lead, I had went on another appointment. And it was, man, I was really, really excited about this appointment. It was in a suburb of Detroit, Livonia, which, like I say, is a suburb of Detroit. And, like, for people that are familiar with that area, it's just like, man, you know, it's a prominent area. The value is out the roof. The house itself didn't need, or what he was asking wasn't crazy. I honestly thought that was going to be my first flip. And I went on an appointment, and I'm walking. I had a conversation with the guy, with the husband, and I'm talking to him. We're walking outside, we're taking our pictures, and then we come in, and things just switch. Like his wife is sitting there, and he's sitting there. He's like, I don't want you in my house. Just I don't know where. I don't want you in my house. And you know, we kind of had a little weird conversation, and basically he kicked me out. So I was kind of disappointed. No, I wasn't kind of. I was very disappointed. It kind of irritated me. But literally on the drive home, I got a call from another lead. It was a house. It's in a neighborhood, East English Village in Detroit, which was, like I said, this was 2017. At the time, I knew values in that area were, houses were selling for $150,000. Talked to the guy, very good conversation. He explained to me that, you know, it was a house that he was living in, and he had his family living in it. He didn't want any, he was tired of dealing with his family living in the house. He was a landlord. He was just tired of it. He had offered to sell the house to his family. They didn't want it. And he said he was done. Like, and he described the house, and the way he described it, I'm like, wow, like this is a really, really nice house, the way he described it. And he said he only wanted $25,000. Like I say, houses are selling for $150,000 in this area. He only wants $25,000. And the way he's described this house, it doesn't sound like it needs much work. So just all that, I set that appointment that day. I made sure that I could get over there to the house. He stated that, you know, he wasn't able to get me in the house because his family wasn't there. So he didn't want to walk me in that day, but I could take pictures outside. So that's what I did. I took pictures outside. Next day I met him over there. He took me inside, and exactly how he described that house was exactly how it was. It literally, I could have bought that house for $25,000, done nothing to it, and listed it for $65,000 and sold it.
Wow.
Like that's how condition it was in. Which, hindsight, I don't wish I did it that way, but I mean, it probably, looking back, it probably would have been a easier move to just do it that way. But anyway, we walked around the house, and I got in my car. I called Jeremy, the guy that I had done, that I've been doing business with up all the way up until this point. And I asked him, you know, I used to always run it by him, like, what do you think? And he was like, I think you should offer him $25,000. And I was like, do you think I should go low? He's like, I wouldn't. And I didn't. So I offered him $25,000. He called his wife right there, and he signed. And that was the very first deal. And like I say, going into it, I could have wholesaled it to another buyer. But I was, again, like I described, I wanted to wholesale, then flip, and then buy and hold. So I just felt this was the perfect opportunity for me to flip. It was a light rehab. There was so much spread to make once the rehab was done. Like, it just made sense for me. So in my mind, that's what I was already thinking. So yeah, signed it for 25, and that was it. Bought it for 25. rehabbed it. We end up putting about, I end up going over what I originally thought. I had originally thought I would put about 25 into it. I put 40 into the house, but I completely renovated it. And we end up selling that for 123.
Wow. Wow. So you were all in about 65 and you, oh, wow. Oh, that's a pretty good spread.
I still have that check.
I would have it too.
To where I know, like, when people talk about, like, those big checks, like, that was the one that changed everything.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy. So your first flip must have felt very good in that experience. Did your experience up to that point with rehabbing, do you think it helped you in the process of fixing that home up?
For sure. So like I say, the one that I had bought, I definitely had a feel for, you know, the rehab, what would need to be done. Also, what I like to point out to people is that, again, with the wholesaling aspect, I was getting in these houses. I was wholesaling them to end buyers. I knew what they were doing to the properties. I knew how much they were spending on the property. I knew if they came back to me, like when I was trying to wholesale, they would say, well, this is going to need this, that, and the third. So I already had a feel, and I'm taking all this knowledge in because I know eventually I'm going to want to buy and flip. So I want to know what their plan is. So yeah, it definitely helped me to have done some type of rehab to wholesale to flippers because I knew what they were doing. I knew the type of finishes they were putting in properties, and I knew the price points they were getting for their sales. Not only that, I was researching markets prior, but I think most importantly, like just being the wholesaler, I knew how to come up with a rehab estimate. And that helped me to say, okay, no, $25,000, this is a deal and I need to jump on it immediately. So for sure, that helped tremendously.
Definitely. And another theme I'm picking up here is that it seems like you were very intentional at every step. So as you were wholesaling, it wasn't just, you know, getting the contract to the buyer. You were also absorbing the knowledge, you know, as you mentioned, the rehab cost. What is the end buyer doing with it? How much are they spending? So I think it speaks to just being intentional, that relationship building. Of course, they don't have to tell you what they're going to do with it. But I feel like, you know, for someone to be that open with their intentions at the end, it speaks to your ability to build relationships. And then with the flip, you were able to identify the opportunity right away. And you also had the end in mind. You're like, you know what? This is the next step for me in order to ultimately continue to be able to buy and hold.
Yeah, no, and you mentioned something that I understand. So Beyond Wynn, he's out of Cleveland, Ohio. I don't know if you follow him or not, but
I do, yeah.
I met Beyond in 2016. I think 2016. He ended up coming to the city with Jay Morrison. They did a day with Jay in the city, and I ended up building with Beyond during that time. And honestly, like, I already had, you know, a certain mindset about me, but he just amplified it to where he really preaches building relationships and being intentional with your building of those relationships or being intentional about what you're trying to do, being laser focused. So in meeting him and talking to him and building with him, it really helped me to understand how important things that I was already doing. Like I was already, you know, a stand-up guy. I had integrity. I had morals. People didn't have to question my behaviors. So I already had a lot of the stuff, but you don't realize in business how important that is until you start reaping the benefits of it. And I hadn't reaped the benefits of it in business, but I always thought, you know, that's just the right thing to do. But in talking to him and building with him, it just drove home a point that to constantly be building relationships, add value to those relationships because you'll reap the benefits. You can't just go out and constantly want to ask people to do this, help you out with this, and you're not adding value to their situation. And that is really, honestly, to this day, I preach it to this day. It's like my main source of marketing is building relationships.
Right.
Like that's how I got the flip. But that, like you say, it buyers will take out their time to walk through what they're doing. They'll show you they'll move the curtain back to show you exactly the ins and outs of what you're doing. And they're not going to just do that just for someone that they know is just going to use them and then take off. Like I say, what I did with Jeremy, when I offered him that hat, it's like, that's building a relationship. That's adding value. All I need is you. All I need is for you to assist me and answer the phone when I call, and you can make half of what I make. That is vital to, I stand on building those relationships, being intentional so that you can reap the benefits, not only for yourself, but also the person that you're building a relationship with. Add value, really.
For sure. And something else that came to mind is it also speaks to the fact that you have an abundance mindset, because in the beginning, that first wholesale deal, you're like, all right, I know someone who can help me out with this. I have a lead. I don't know everything, but I'm willing to give you half if you just help me. And I feel like that was very key in the snowball, because let's say you wanted to keep all the money in your pocket and you thought, oh, maybe you had a scarcity mentality and you said, you know what? I may not have another deal again. I need to keep all this money to myself. Who knows? You probably would not have even been able to close that first deal, and we wouldn't be able to talk about what we're talking about today.
100%. I salute Jay for the lesson that I, because I didn't know anything about, you know, real estate beyond. He was very impactful to, you know, how I do business. Jeremy, very influential. Definitely majority of the relationships I have now was, not to say that I wouldn't been able to meet these people, but because of the work that I did with Jeremy, and he knew the type of person that I was, he could say, you need Eric. You need a guy to manage your project, you need Eric. You're looking for people to you want to spend some money as far as like private lenders, talk to Eric. You got a deal that you're trying to move that you don't deal with Detroit, send it to Eric. Like, Jeremy has been one of my biggest supporters and has introduced me to a vast majority of the people that I still do business with today because of the relationship I established with him. Because like you say, it's an abundance. There is,
yep.
Like, we live in a universe to where we can create just about, no, we can create anything that we want. So there's no reason to think that, oh, I'm going to keep this whole assignment fee because I don't want this person to make all the money. No, if I can, you can make some money, I can make some money, and then we can grow, and then we can make more money together, it's going to amplify. And I do that to this day. Like, I'm always willing to pay someone half of what I make on an assignment, or a percentage of what I make on an assignment, just because it gets the deal done. And then not only that, you know that you're dealing with someone that even if we don't sign a contract, you know it's someone that is going to do what they say they're going to do, and you're going to get paid. But I live by that. Like, it's, we live in abundance. It's not, having a scarcity mindset is going to be detrimental to your success.
For sure. So from there, how did things grow? Were you buying and holding more? And just on the buy and hold side, where have things grown at, and where are you kind of at with that today?
So that was May of 2017. I have, since May of 2017, I have not been buying or selling the property that I own since May of 2017. Literally, every month since then, I've either been purchasing a property to rehab, currently rehabbing, buying a property to sell or rent out since May of 2017. So that really, honestly, just with the snowball aspect of things, like, I bought that property in May. I finished the rehab. It took me about 4 months. Yeah, I finished in September. In August, I was already buying my second buy-in flip. So I started rehabbing that one, finishing up the one that I was already doing. I didn't end up selling the previous flip until December of that year. And then I was still working on the rehab that I purchased prior to that. And then by March of 2018, I was selling that second flip, and I literally was buying my next flip that same week. Literally, I sold the previous flip and bought my next flip the same week. And then I was rehabbing that one all the way up until about August. In July, I bought another flip. And then I end up was rehabbing both of those at the same time. Sold one of those in December. End up buying, in the midst of all that, bought a buy and hold a few months prior and was rehabbing that one. So it's been a constant, like, I literally have not been in a rehab process since May of 2017.
Wow. That's very cool, man. And then when Beyond Wind was in town, did you have opportunity to meet Jay Morrison as well?
Yeah, so it was a day with Jay.
Mm-hmm.
Was the event. And Beyond was with him during that time. So the corner class they were doing, actually it was the corner class, but then he was doing the day with Jay the following day. So the corner class, they both came. Jay spoke at the corner class. Beyond spoke. And I had talked to Beyond that day too. And he posted on his page back then, like, he, during our conversation, he felt like it was something about me that he was going to stay in touch with me. He ended up, like, posting that a few months later. So we talked, but then the next day was the actual day with Jay. So it was a more personalized, like, we met up with Jay and Beyond. We had breakfast. We went out and walked through a few properties. And then also we went to a class where they taught us more. So I had talked to Beyond that day, but then the next day I was already building with him. And then after that, ever since, we've been staying in contact. Even one of the guys, Ken Woods, who walked us through the properties that day, I'm working with him now. Right. We're working on, building a business together to wholesale and buy and flip and buy and hold. So it's just, like I say, constant, nurturing of relationships and planting seeds and, just, like I say, being intentional, working on, mental aspects of life. And it's just now starting to kind of flourish the way I expected it then. Because I told my homeboy that I went to the day with the corner class with, I told him that day, I was like, because during that time, I was trying to meet up with Jay. And this was the year after the day with Jay class. That second year, I was trying to meet up with him just to chop it up with him. And, like, if anyone comes to your city, everybody is flocking towards him. And just me kind of being the person that I am, I'm like, I'm not going to force myself just to say what up and then that be the end of it. I said, next time he comes to the city, he's going to have a reason to come talk to me. And that next year, he came and did the video with me in one of my rehabs that I was doing.
Wow. Incredible, man.
Incredible. It's really, honestly, just being intentional. Really, you got to really work towards, what you're looking to achieve and be ready for it, really. That's most important, be ready for it. Because a lot of people be asking for stuff and they're not ready for what they're asking for. And I know that was me in 2014, 2015, 2016. I would have messed it up had I gotten it.
Definitely. So Detroit, a lot of people are interested in investing in Detroit. There's a lot of buzz about Detroit, all over the country, really, about what's happening there, the investment opportunities there. And I remember when we met, you had a whole list of events that you went to that particular week just to talk to people about investing in Detroit. So could you talk about the Detroit market as it is, and I guess what you've seen over the years and where you think it's going?
Well, you're going to, a lot of this will be pre-Corona, because Corona has changed. But really, like I say, when I was out there, it was more so just, I knew there was a need because of a lot of investors or millennials are wanting to get into real estate because it's like it's a popular term. And especially if you're out west, price points are ridiculous compared to the Midwest. And your cash on cash return or your ROI is through the roof compared to what you can get in California. So that's why that is what makes Detroit a very popular place to want to invest some money, because you can buy a house for, 20 grand, put 15 into it and rent it out for 950. So that's very attractive to a lot of investors. So I understood that. I mean, I wholesale. I've sold to out-of-state investors. A lot of the, what I was finding out was a lot of investors are getting burned because they think because they're only buying a house for 20 grand, it's a deal. And that's not always the case because in Detroit, we look at things basically on a block by block basis. Like you could literally change the numbers or the scenery by walking around the corner or walking down the street. So it makes a difference where you buy, and you, and the only way to know that is if you're here or if you have someone here that you really trust and that's giving you complete honesty and transparent. They're not just looking at things from a dollar standpoint. They don't want you to just buy this house because they know they'll get a fee or they'll get paid for selling you a house. So I noticed that. And then just in talking with, like I met Jacqueline Sims, and her and I had just been talking about this, and just she's out there obviously with you guys, so she understands, you know, where people's mindsets are. And it was just like, it just made sense to, it was already on my agenda to get out there and meet people and build relationships. But when she came into the fold, she just brought it all to life to say, hey, we can do this, we can do that. So basically, like I say, you could, the value in Detroit is that you can get a lot of cash flow for a lot less money than you would in other parts of the country. And that's still the same even with the virus. It's just obviously people are uncertain. They don't really know what's going on, but people are still buying. They're still buying, especially now with how banks are and what they're doing with the financing changes. You know, it's almost benefiting landlords to a certain extent because they're kind of knocking out a lot of people that might have been wanting to buy a house. They're no longer able to because you got to have a certain credit score, you got to have a certain amount down. So it's forcing them to rent, which is going to benefit landlords. So it's still a prime city to purchase property in. Like say I have a 2-bedroom, 1-bath for $26,000. It doesn't need much work. A rent for anywhere from $600 to $700 a month. That's still a good deal on a nice street, not like a war zone. So it's still beneficial. And that's the attraction to Detroit, honestly. It's just that at the price point, you can get a decent property for a lot less than what you would in other places, and then you can rent it out for about the same as what you would do in other places, but for a fraction of the money.
For sure. And it seems like a lot of jobs and such are coming back to the city as well.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that kind of benefited the city is, you know, when we went through what we went through in 2006, 7, 8, 9, you know, is that Detroit was so heavily reliant on the automotive industry, whereas we weren't diversified at all. Basically, when they tanked, the city tanked, and, you know, everyone knows the story after that. Now, you know, the automotive industry has pretty much bounced back outside of, you know, this virus. And not only that, there's tons of investors that are putting money into, you know, not only, you know, the automotive industry, but, you know, startups and tech companies and, you know, restaurants are doing very well here. You know, it's a place now where millennials want to go because of all the jobs and, you know, what they're doing in the city and the neighborhoods. So we have a lot more going for the city now versus, you know, 2008, where we were so heavily reliant on the automotive industry.
For sure. I think Dan Gilbert has put a lot of money into the city. Is that right?
Yeah, Dan Gilbert pretty much owns downtown. he's definitely was one of the people who, like, that Warren Buffett mindset. It's like when other people are fearful, that's when you get greedy. You know, he was buying things when no one else was buying it, and he moved his headquarters for Quicken Loans, you know, moved them here, and he really created an infrastructure to succeed. And, you know, he was right.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Definitely. So what does the future look like? You know, I think what we've seen in just about 4 short years, things have turned around for you completely. You know, you're at a point of basically despair in the beginning where it's like you're at a crossroads. You had to figure out like, hey, am I going to do this or am I not going to do this? And you decided to do it. And, you know, you've grown your business to be very successful to this point. So what are some things you want to do in the future? What does that look like for you and your business?
So I'm out. Until I'm not, I don't know when I would ever stop wholesaling. I always want to be able to create that need for sellers that just want to get out and they don't want to deal with the traditional route of selling real estate. And they know that I provide a service that will assist them. And then also I know I can, you know, appeal to buyers who, you know, who want a property at a good price. So I think I'll always do that. But obviously long-term it's passive income. That's always been the goal. Buy more rentals, eventually transcend into the commercial space. That was next on the agenda. Especially this year was really when I was looking to purchase and get into, you know, 10 plus units of commercial space, residential commercial space. Also, I see private lending in my future. That's definitely an avenue that I know people are familiar with, but I don't know if they look at it like it's a, like I see that as right there with owning rentals. To be able to put $100,000 out for 3 months and make, you know, anywhere from 10 to 18,000, that's a huge advantage to not move. Basically just press a button on a wire to that. That's passive income at that point. So private lending, commercial real estate, community. Like, it's a lot of things that I want to do in the neighborhood that I grew up in. A lot of I'm working with my brother Fred. He has his nonprofit. We're going to be looking to do a lot of things in our community where we grew up in. What else? I don't ever see me starting like any classes or anything like that because I'm just so the way. I mean, I invested into something like that and I didn't feel like I got the value that I did from people that was willing to give me everything for free. And that's just kind of how I move. So I don't ever see me doing anything like that, but I definitely, I'm already in the works with Jamil Strickland, who was another investor here. We've started a Detroit real estate social club where we're looking to, obviously there's meetups and Facebook groups all over the world, but we're looking to add a different element to things and really bring, like a community family type of atmosphere to real estate investing. So that's something that I really want to build on. And then really just be able to teach and pass on things to my kids so that they don't have to, so they're ahead of the game when they get to be 18 and they're at the crossroads. Should I go to college or should I get a job or, you know, should I do this? Like, well, you can do whatever you want because you got things in place, you know, you got rentals of your own that it's not like you're not in survival mode at that point. You can make a decision based off what really makes sense for yourself. And you can avoid a lot of the mistakes that I made. And then also not only that, you can avoid a lot of debt that I incurred because I wasn't aware. So that's just where I'm at with it. Like really just 5, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years down the line, just really building a strong business, but then also a strong legacy that my family can be proud of and start a generation that thinks completely different than how my generation grew up, at least within my family, if nothing else.
For sure. For sure. How, speaking of family, how involved is your family and kind of what's happening now and your son in what you're doing?
So and as far as real estate?
Yeah.
Well, so right now they're not, I mean, I got a 2-year-old and a 10-year-old. Right now, they are a part of my company, which owns assets. So they're in it in that realm.
Nice.
But, and they'll always be. Like, I talk to my 10-year-old all the time. Like, you know, this is why I do this. This is why I go on this appointment. This is why I'm buying this house. You know, this is why you should, you know, like, maybe if you want to do a lemonade stand, do a lemonade stand. Or, no, don't buy don't ask me for $100 for V-Bucks for Fortnite. You know, you can put that, start, you know, maybe get a vending machine to where you don't have to ask me for money anymore. So they're always involved in that realm of me educating them. And then I say they're a part of the company. But they used to be, as far as my mailers, like when I first started sending mailers, I would print them out. My mom would, she would write the envelopes out, and my nephew would fold them and stamp the letters. So that was how I was really involving them in the beginning. It's like, yeah, they were like my fulfillment company for my direct mail.
Right.
But yeah, like I say, now they go on appointments with me. They know what I do. And I'm just slowly trying to just feed little, you know, cause I don't want to, because real estate might not be where they want to go. Mm-hmm. I definitely want them to at least say that I know what this is. I know what a ROI is. I know what cash on cash is. I know why my dad does what he does, because it gives you options.
You know? For sure. For sure. And of course, you know, a lot of people in our community, a lot of millennials and just people in general, they're very interested in real estate. As you mentioned earlier, something that people are interested in, it's a buzzword. It's something that people know is a good thing to do if you know what you're doing. So what are some tips you would give, just based on your experience and what you've been able to do, what are some tips you would give to someone just starting out, but maybe they're kind of nervous, they don't know what to do?
Well, definitely the first thing I would say is educate yourself and figure out exactly what it is you want to do. Because I mean, people talk about stocks, they talk about day trading, you know, they talk about, you know, a lot of t-shirts. It's a lot of, you know, ways to make money. And obviously our generation is looking for ways to make money. I would just say, educate yourself, figure out if it's something that you really, really want to do. And can you do it if you don't make money for 6 months? Is it something that you're willing to just stick with for 6 months without making money? If you're not willing to do it for 6 months and not make any money, then it's probably not, you're not going to be passionate enough about it to see any success in it. So figure out exactly what you want to do. And if it is something you want to do, then honestly, just immerse yourself in it like you would do anything else that you're looking to be successful in. People, I don't know if I'm just different. Like, I remember when I was working at Walgreens, I used to dream about unloading the truck. Like, not purposely, but because I was just so immersed into that world, I used to dream about unloading totes and ringing up customers. And now it's real estate. So if you don't feel like you can fully immerse yourself 100% in something, don't do it. And if you look at all the greats in real estate and investing and podcasting and YouTubers and basketball players, football players, I guarantee you the top will, if you look at them, they'll have a few common traits, but I guarantee you they've immersed themselves into whatever it is that they're doing. They eat, sleep, breathe, whatever it is they're doing. So if you're not willing to commit 100% to it, then you probably should just find something else to do. If you are interested, then just commit to it 100%. And that just involves, like I say, immersing yourself in it, educating yourself, getting out into the world and telling people what you're doing, networking with people, and then apply the stuff that you've learned daily. Not weekly, not monthly, daily. You should be doing something in that, or in this case, in real estate, to set yourself up for the future. It's really, like a lot of people say, there really is no secret. Like, you just really got to immerse yourself, commit, and just start doing it. Don't get too caught up in reading books or being online or listening to podcasts or checking Bigger Pockets. Like, all those platforms are good, and I still get valuable information from it. But I also take what I'm learning and go out into the world and apply it and actually meet people.
Absolutely.
Take people who are online and meet them in person. People that you meet in person, put them in some online database that you can track them.
For sure. For sure. Wow, man. This was a really, really good interview. Really good interview. And it's just a testament to to not giving up, to just continuing to learn and have a growth mindset, have an abundance mindset. And you know, I know our listeners will get a lot of value out of it. And there might be some people who are going through a rough patch in their real estate career, in their chosen area of focus. But you know, I believe this interview can be a great example of just not giving up. And you know, you can always reinvent yourself. You can always build upon what you've done. And your life could change in 1 year. And so I definitely know our listeners would get value from this. So how can our listeners reach you? How can they learn more about your business? If they want to follow you, if they want to invest in Detroit, if they want to just learn more, what would be the best options?
I would say follow me on Instagram Friday. I pretty much, I try to respond to all DMs. I'm also on Facebook, Eric Friday. Just reach out to me. I'm, you know, like I say, I do have a booking in my bio for people that want to get on like a 30-minute call, and it's like $30. But I probably answer more DMs than I do take calls from people. I don't force people to say, okay, no, I'm not answering. Go to my bio and book a call with me. So if you, like I say, if you want to just connect with me, build with me, reach out on Instagram, say, hey, I saw you on the podcast, just wanted to run some things by you. I'm perfectly fine with, you know, helping in any way I can, providing any insight as much as I can. But yeah, Real Estate Friday on Instagram, Eric Friday on Facebook. And then if we build from there, we can get on the phone, email. Like if you want to get on my buyers list, just email me at eric@detpropertysolution.com. I can add you to my buyers list. Once you connect with me on social media, you can pretty much get in contact with me.
Sure. Appreciate you, man. Thank you again for coming on, and thank you everyone for listening. You can find us on Instagram at Black Real Estate Dialogue and on Twitter at Bread Podcast, at BRED Podcast. Look forward to talking to you all soon. And Eric, thank you again, man.
Oh man, I appreciate it. I'm glad we finally got this done.
I know, for sure.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the season is here. Right now, score up to 80% off everything home, plus fast and free shipping site-wide. Shop now through July 28th at wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.